This episode is brought to you by nonprofit organization Salts Are Metals Too, raising awareness about the underappreciated role that potassium and sodium play in our bodily society. These conductive ions are the heroes of our rapid nerve transmissions and steady rhythms like heartbeats. Be an advocate for our salts for as little as one banana a day. Join the conversation at hashtag Salts Are Metals Too. What up, listeners? Welcome back to the Indie Bio Killer of the Week podcast. It's your host, Wesley Dang. And for those of you new to the show, we follow the winners of our internal competition in the program called Killer of the Week, where our founders go head to head and convince each other who has made the most progress in the past 7 days. I'm here with Sahan Ranamuka, the CEO of Proton Intel, who's creating the world's first continuous kidney monitoring device. Sensor device. It's similar to Levels, or, you know, one of those really sleek continuous glucose monitors that you put on the back of your arm. But why measure potassium? Your cells have a way of creating an imbalance of metals like potassium to maintain a voltage across the membrane. And for example, that's how neurons are able to fire. Of all the cells that are voltage sensitive, there's probably none more important than the ones in your heart, which are intricately timed so that the heart can function as a unit and not some kind of chaotic, untimed mess. And so you can imagine that for dialysis patients that don't have functioning kidneys to filter out and maintain that fine balance of potassium, a continuous potassium monitor would be huge. Sahan, welcome to the show, and tell our listeners why your peers had voted you Killer of the Week last week.
Well, thanks for having me, Wesley. At Proton Intel, we're developing the first sensor for potassium monitoring in the body. That means the first asset that we developed was a potassium-selective membrane that can detect potassium in and around it. This membrane is something we've spent over a year developing, but we've been able to do this in commercial electrodes, which are relatively large. But we knew that in order to get this to a form factor that allowed us to put this on our skin, we had to shrink this entire electrode by more than 1,000-fold. For the past 3 months, this is what we've been trying to do. Miniaturization of these type of electrodes is a hard ask. So we've had lots of trial and error. We've had lots of discussions with experts because we've had challenges around getting it miniaturized. At the beginning of last week, we finally cracked that. We were able to shrink our electrode and membrane composition by over 1,000-fold into a tiny, tiny sensor that we can now place inside of our skin to start getting measurements.
So I'm imagining the hard part isn't just to shrink it, it's actually to shrink it and make it work the same way it did when it was big, right?
It was one ask to miniaturize this thing and make it work. But the key surprise for us was the fact that the miniaturized sensor worked beautifully. It worked comparably to what it was like at a macroscopic scale. That has huge implications in our next steps when we move into first-in-human testing.
I'm talking with Sahan right now, who's in Vancouver, Canada, and the rest of his team is all over the world.
So we have our sensing team in Australia, in Melbourne, Australia. I have part of my product team in Vancouver, Canada, and we just have a most recent member in Dublin, Ireland.
So tell me the story. What were you doing when you first got the news, just really briefly, and how did people react?
We first got the meeting during our Monday team meeting, and I know that Esma has been working. Esma is my biosensing expert and guru, working tirelessly in our lab in Australia. So the funny thing is, the Friday before this team meeting, Victor sent me a message and said, I think we are at 50% probability that we can get the sensors in. On Sunday for us, Monday in Australia, he said, maybe we have some promising news. We might be at 60%. And then we walk into the team meeting and Esma throws this figure up and no one really reacts to it except me. What I see in front of me is a tiny sensor that actually works. I can see step by step how this sensor is responding to potassium. Everyone else is quiet and I go loose. I'm like, holy moly, this is the thing we've been trying to do and now it works.
We're going to take a break to take a listener caller. Seems to be driving hands-free in his Tesla from Chicago. Mohan, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call. Fascinating interview. You know, I'm sitting here looking at all these insurance companies in the Chicago skyline here, and I'm wondering, all right, this is cool, sounds pretty good, but will insurers really pay for this? This seems like a luxury item, maybe like a gadget that people won't pay for.
Every year, a dialysis patient gets admitted to the hospital 3 times, and that costs, on average, $45,000 a year. We believe we can save 2 of those hospital admissions. That's $30,000. And when we've spoken with payers and providers, they've told us that we can take 20 to 30% of those savings as upside for us. So imagine $6,000 to $9,000 per patient per year as revenue to Proton Intel. In order to hit $100 million mark of revenue, we don't need to serve all 500,000 dialysis patients. We only need to serve a tiny fraction of it. Maybe 10 to 20,000 dialysis patients can provide us $100 million in recurring revenue. So as much as I'm trying to make it economically viable, we're primarily hitting clinical outcomes first. We are giving dialysis patients more time to live safely, comfortably, and in a meaningful way. And in the meantime, we're saving all that money on hospital admissions, but we're taking a huge upside in it.
That's all you get for now, but thank you for tuning in. If you want to hear more about Proton Intel, go to indiebio.co, search Proton Intel, and that's one word, Proton Intel. Until next week, we'll see you on the IndieBio Killer of the Week podcast. Enjoy your weekend.